Ring the bell. We've done it again. Golden Oak Lending has lowered rates to 4.875 fixed. Lower your monthly payment, get cash out, pay off credit cards, and best of all, make no mortgage payments for 2 months. Lock in this incredible 4.875 rate and get your cash in as little as 14 days. Visit goldenoaklending.com today.
Golden Oak Lending, cured my blues.
5.81 APR, FHA, 15-year, 20% equity qualified credit. Additional terms apply. NMLS 114937.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
What kind of programs does this school have? How are the test scores? How many kids do a classroom? Homes.com knows these are all things you ask when you're home shopping as a parent. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools, including photos, parent reviews, test scores, student-teacher ratio, school rankings, and more. The information is from multiple trusted sources and curated by Homes.com's dedicated in-house research team. It's all so you can make the right decision for your family. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
We're back live with more Rami Makhlouf on 670 The Score in Odyssey Station.
With you till about 8:30 as I take you right up to Cubs and A's from Sacramento, which is weird to say. That's weird to say. Cubs and A's from Sacramento, from a minor league ballpark. We'll talk about that a little later on in the show. Also later this hour, Evan Altman of Cubs Insider will join me at about 7:20. But I want to talk to Cubs fans and see if you're feeling the same way I'm feeling. And by the way, I saw a text that said, let's talk about another White Sox win. We will. I will talk about that before I get out of here. Maybe even this segment. We'll see how things go. But fear not, White Sox fans. We will get to that win today. I want to know if Cubs fans are feeling the same way I'm feeling about this season. Are you more on edge to start this Cubs season than you usually are? Get in on the show at 312-644-6767. Take a couple calls before we talk with Evan Altman at 7:20. I'll read your texts throughout the show. And I saw a couple of your texts on the bullpen and the torpedo bat. I'll get to that in just 1 second. But man, I don't know what it is, and I'm trying to figure out what it is. Maybe that's why I'm talking about it with you here today. Maybe we can get to the bottom of it together. But there is something about this season that makes me have to keep checking myself and stepping back and trying to have a little perspective about this year, because these games, the wins, the losses, they shouldn't feel as good or as bad as they do. And I remember after the series in Tokyo, and I wasn't the only one saying this. They talked about it on every show on the station. I thought Mully and Haw put it very well when they said that those two games felt like games 163 and 164 of the 2024 season, just because of the way that the offense performed in that series, and the way that we saw that bullpen collapse yesterday and has struggled throughout the start of the year. I think that feels too familiar to what we saw last season, and getting off to a slow start in general feels a lot like last year. And I don't know about you. Let me know. 312-644-6767. I'm very on edge. I'm on eggshells about another slow start to the season, which quite frankly is a real possibility, regardless of what the Cubs did in the offseason or anything else, just because of the challenges that this opening of the season presents, which again has been talked about at length with the start in Tokyo, and then you come back and you start the season out west in Arizona and Sacramento, and then you come home for a day game, and then you have to go back out west to face the Dodgers and the Padres, and you also have the Phillies on the schedule in the first month of the season. It's really the who's who of the National League that the Cubs are going to have to face here in the first month of the season, so they could play decent baseball and still end up on the wrong end of a lot of those games because they're going up against a lot of good teams. And the way that the schedule is structured presents its own challenges. Now, I talked about what it does to a pitching staff to start the season in Japan the way that they did and then come back and have to deal with everything that I just laid out. So all these things, the offense at times just seeming to go silent and not know what to do with runners in scoring position. The bullpen collapsing at times, including 8 runs to turn a 4-run lead into a 4-run deficit in the 8th inning yesterday. A slow start in general, I think just it feels a little too familiar to me, and I find myself watching these games and almost feeling, and this is crazy, somebody talk me off the ledge, sometimes it feels like a playoff game, the way that I'm reacting to it. I'm clapping, I'm fist pumping, I'm throwing stuff when I see like what happened yesterday in that 8th inning, and I can't remember ever being this on edge in the first week of a baseball season when it comes to the Cubs, because I look at the way last season went, I look at what they did in the offseason, and even though, like I said in the first hour of the show, like what they did to the bullpen, I do. It's not working so far, but I like what they did to the bullpen. I was also talking all offseason, and a lot of Cubs fans were, about what they didn't do when it comes to the lineup and the offense and adding a bat in addition to Kyle Tucker to sort of put yourself into a different class of offenses and lineups that right now is really middle of the pack. For them to conduct the offseason the way that they did, and then for it to look so familiar and so similar to what we saw last year, I go back to what I heard Mully and Haw say, which is this, to an extent, feels like an extension of last season. And we all know, and the Cubs will tell you, hell, Jed Hoyer and Craig Counsell have told you, last season was just not good enough. Flat out not good enough. They didn't meet expectations. They didn't put a good product out there that Cubs fans could feel good about and feel proud of a lot of the time. It just wasn't good enough. And so to come into this season, after conducting the offseason the way that they did, and for it to look a lot the same, and it's really early, and it might not look the same within a matter of weeks. But I think that's really what's kind of given me that feeling in the pit of my stomach watching this first week of the season that I normally do not have. Do you find yourself feeling the same way? Are you more on edge about this Cubs team than you have been in the first week of a season that you can remember? 312-644-6767. I want to get to some calls in just a second, but I do want to talk about that Sox win today, and that's their second of the season. They're now 2-2, just hammering the Twins 9-0 today, including Andrew Benintendi's second home run. Andrew Vaughn went deep as well. Luis Robert had himself an RBI, and I don't know if White Sox fans want to hear this. I think most of you know what this is. I mean, they're not even, Chris Getz is not even sugarcoating or trying to mask or disguise what this thing is right now. They're not trying to compete. They don't think they're at a place to compete yet. And I think most of us look at it and understand that. So while I don't like to talk about a win this early in the season in this way, I think the way White Sox fans are or should be looking at this White Sox team, and when they have days like they did today, is guys making themselves valuable to the rest of the league. And it starts with Luis Robert. That's the biggest trade chip that they have. But Andrew Benintendi could be somebody that teams come calling for come September. Andrew Vaughn, who's shown 20 home run power previously in his career, whose team control will be running up here in the next year or two. To get the day that they did from Martin Perez, 6 innings scoreless this afternoon in the against the Twins at home. These are the types of things I'd be looking for, performances like that from some of the veteran guys on this team and some of the guys that teams will come calling for when the trade deadline approaches. That's the best thing that you can get as a White Sox fan right now. And wins are nice, yes. And if they win enough games, maybe they change how Chris Getz and you and I are looking at this. And maybe they're going to shock the world with the season that they're having right now. Again, 2-2, 9 runs today. They won the home opener. But that, to me, is how I'm looking at this White Sox season. The wins will come, and who can you get for a Luis Robert? Who can you get for an Andrew Benintendi? Who can you get for an Andrew Vaughn or a Martin Perez? And from that perspective, today was a very, very good day out there at Guaranteed Rate Field. If you want to talk White Sox, I'm here for that as well. People think me specifically, maybe ignore the White Sox. Don't give them enough love. I'm here to talk about it. 312-644-6767. Here's a text from the 815. Being 2-2 as a Sox fan with new coach, young team, I'm seeing where it goes. I strongly believe that Jerry needs to sell the team. Yeah, I think most people would agree with that. Let's get out to these phones at 312-644-6767. Rick is in Knoxville. He wants to talk about that Cubs bullpen. What's up, Rick?
Hey, appreciate the show. You're doing a great job. Thank you very
Pleasure.
Much.
Thank you.
Hey, Cubs, so very frustrating start to the season, obviously. They've been throwing a lot of different challenges that have come their way with international travel. You know, I think the most frustrating thing, I'm like you, it feels like deja vu from last season. And just, I think the frustrating thing is there was a chart that came out recently about how the Cubs are, how they invest their money into the team. And based off of the other Major League Baseball teams, the Cubs are near the very bottom of the money that they make and reinvest in the team. And that's really disappointing because Wrigley Field and the Cubs, that area is a walking ATM. Mm-hmm. Now, my question and my concerns are, what value does Craig Counsell bring to this team? I have not seen it yet at this point. I really have, and I've been trying to stay open-minded. It's only been a year and 4 or 5 games. But what value does he bring in even managing this bullpen? And I think that we're also seeing the struggle of him. It'd be great to have a guy like Luke Little who can come in as a lefty. I think that having one lefty in your bullpen is a problem. And so overall, I'm not impressed. When you have this whole offseason to invest and make sure you have the very best bullpen possible and you get beat out over and over again or not willing to invest that type of money, it's been really, really frustrating. So my question for you is, A, what value do you see in Craig Counsell so far? And then B, do you think that having a guy like Luke Little or an additional lefty is important? And are we being kind of challenged by the fact that we've got guys that maybe are not ready to be at the major league level on the roster when it comes to positional players that might be impacting the bullpen? But thank you very much. Go Cubs. We've got a tough series ahead. Sacramento is not a cakewalk anymore. The A's are for real. And so you got to bring your A game. Thank you so much.
Appreciate the call. As far as Craig Counsell goes, you haven't gotten the bang for your buck yet. You just haven't. And when you look at what he won with in Milwaukee in terms of the payroll, the resources that they gave him versus what he has not won with and everything he's been given in Chicago, you haven't gotten the bang for your buck. You haven't gotten the return on investment yet. I still happen to believe he's a very good manager. And if you ask what he brings or what has he shown you in his time as the Cubs manager, I would point to last year and that bullpen, which was an absolute mess to start the year. And I think that's more on the Jed Hoyer and the front office, but that bullpen, that was an absolute mess. Finding the arms and finding the right mix of arms as that bullpen really became kind of dominant down the home stretch of the season, I think that had a lot to do with Craig Counsell and sort of knowing how to piece that puzzle together once he had a chance to sort of dig in and find out who was who, both at the major league and minor league level in terms of the bullpen arms that he has. Yeah, they could use another lefty. I'm not going to push back on that one. Do want to get in one more call before the break. Let's go to Reggie in Bolingbrook, who wants to talk White Sox. What's up, Reg? Oh, Reggie dropped off. We're also due for a break anyways. Hey, if you're tuning in to catch the Bulls and Thunder, they're over on our sister station, WBBM, because we got Cubs baseball coming up in the 8 o'clock hour pregame show getting underway right around 8:30 as they get set to take on the A's. Our last caller said Sacramento is not a joke anymore. Just so everybody knows, they're not the Sacramento A's, okay? They are just the A's. They're not the Oakland A's. They are not the Las Vegas A's, which they eventually will be. They are just the A's, and they'll tell anybody who wants to know that they're just the A's. They are not an affiliate of any city in America. Even though they play in Sacramento, they are just the A's. So we'll have Cubs and just the A's from Sacramento coming up at about 8:30. We'll keep the Cubs talk going right after this. I'll see what Evan Altman thinks about this slow start, the slow bats, the bullpen imploding, how similar it feels to last year. We'll get into all that with Evan Altman of Cubs Insider. He'll join me, Rami Makhlouf, on the Score Evening Show right after this.
Going up.
Prices keep going up these days. It feels like being on an elevator that only goes up.
Going up.
But not at Metro. We're pushing the down button.
Going down.
We've lowered prices. Get one line of 5G data for $40, period. That's 20% lower. And you get a free 5G phone when you bring your number. Only at Metro.
5-year guarantee on eligible plans. Exclusions apply. See website for details. Not available at Metro with T-Mobile in the past 6 months. Tax applies.
Looking for a job is lonely. Endless searching, phone calls that go nowhere, applications that vanish into thin air. What if you could link with dozens of local companies who are hiring right now with just one connection? That's Express Employment Professionals. Find us at expresspros.com. One connection, endless opportunities, and no fees ever for job seekers. Express Employment Professionals. Expresspros.com.
Nerds! Today's episode is sponsored by Smart Travel, a new podcast from NerdWallet. Smart Travel doesn't just cover points and miles. They break down all the financial aspects of your trip, whether that's the best days to book, how to avoid hidden fees, or which fancy travel credit cards pay off, and which ones are just an expensive flex. If you want your travel budget to work harder, then dive into the best deals, products, services, and more with Smart Travel from NerdWallet, wherever you get your podcasts.
Question for our listeners. Which automaker assembles the most vehicles in the country? Here's a hint. It's the same one that employs the most hourly workers in the country, and the answer is Ford. That's not a coincidence. It's a commitment. A commitment your local Ford stores share. And that is why Ford is now offering employee pricing across their full lineup of vehicles, which means you pay what they pay. So visit your local Ford stores today to take advantage of this great opportunity. Ford Motor Company. From America for America.
Optimize your nutrition this year with Factor, America's number one ready-to-eat meal service. Factor's fresh, never-frozen meals are dietitian-approved, ready to eat in just 2 minutes. Choose from 40 weekly options across 8 dietary preferences like Calorie Smart, Protein Plus, and Keto. Eat smarter at factormeals.com/listen50 and use code LISTEN50 for 50% off plus free shipping on your first box. Factormeals.com/listen50. Code LISTEN50.
We're back live with more Rami Makhlouf on 670 The Score in Odyssey Station.
That's me with you till about 8:30, right up to Cubs baseball as they take on the A's in Sacramento. We'll talk some Bears with you coming up at 8 o'clock. Some very rough math. Says the Bears might have got worse this offseason. I tried to figure it out, and I'll see what I came up with. You'll see what I came up with coming up at 8 o'clock. But joining me now on the Score Hotline, which is brought to you by Circus Sports Illinois. Download the Circus Sports app today. He is the editor-in-chief of Cubs Insider. He is Evan Altman. Evan, how are you this evening, my man?
I'm doing pretty well. You know, I'm actually in Vegas right now, so things could be a lot worse for me. So I'm gonna try to live it up a little bit. We'll see.
You might have had a similar experience to me then of watching that game last night. I don't know exactly where in Vegas you might have been watching that game last night, but I was working another job that I have, Evan, and I shouldn't be admitting this on the air, but I was watching the Cubs game and getting ready for this job while I was working that job, but I had the volume all the way down because I was working and I wasn't supposed to be watching the game. So I look up, I didn't hear the home run call or home run calls and as the floodgates opened in the eighth inning. I swear, as fast as I looked up to do what I was supposed to be doing and then looked back down, it went from a four-run lead to a four-run deficit. And I had to rewind on the YouTube TV and figure out exactly what happened. Was that similar to your experience watching yesterday?
No, unfortunately, I only just got into town this morning, I was busy writing about torpedo bats. And all of a sudden, you know, then the Cubs bullpen just torpedoed the game. So it kind of went full circle. But I was looking up. I'm like, why are they showing this replay over and over and over again? No, these are actually different players all just hitting the ball really, really hard in succession for the Diamondbacks. So, yeah, things went sideways in a hurry.
How do you process that? Because I was watching that, and there's a part of me that's going, oh no, not this again, after what we saw from the bullpen last year. And then I try to step back and remember about, you know, all the challenges that the start of this season brings to the Cubs, but especially to their pitchers and to their bullpen, and try to have some patience about the whole thing and be a little bit level-headed. Where are you at with this bullpen that's been getting beat up here to start the season, Evan?
Yeah, I mean, I think I'm right there with you. It's kind of one of those where the knee-jerk reaction is to just blow up and wonder what the heck is going on, and oh, it's the same old, same old. But I think the issue with it is, as you kind of noted there, I mean, you look at Ryan Brazier and Tyson Miller, two guys who were supposed to hold down roles in the middle to back end of that bullpen, both on the IL. You know, you've got Javier Assad on the IL, which kind of pushes things up the line a little bit more. Julian Merriweather was up a couple times in the bullpen previously in the series. He was unavailable. Porter Hodge had thrown a bunch of pitches. Ryan Pressly. There's a lot that goes into it, but I also look at that and say, you know, these are guys for whom the Cubs have traded or guys they've signed. Like, you can't go out there and have a performance like that when you're in a position up 6-2, you've got a chance to take 3 out of 4 to even your record. And so the game itself, I think, had a little bit more weight than maybe what we normally see this early. Yeah, a lot of factors in there. I think we'll have to wait for a few more weeks to really put much of a judgment on them.
At what point, though, do we start freaking out and going, oh my God, this is really happening again? This isn't just all these factors at play here that are, you know, hurting performance or getting them off to this slow start. How much patience should we have, Evan, as Cubs fans in watching this thing? And like I said, knowing the challenges that the early schedule brings.
Yeah, I mean, I've seen this elsewhere, so I'm not going to claim to be the one that came up with it or anything. But I think given how, you know, not only the odd start to things and, you know, playing twice at 5 a.m. and now you've got all these 9 p.m. starts, it's kind of wild in and of itself. But they've got a really tough schedule here in these opening few weeks, right? So basically you look at April, and I think if they can get into May at least treading water, right, being at or a little bit above 500, the schedule gets a little bit easier, they get into more of the divisional matchups, and I think at that point, you know, you should have all those guys healthy with enough of a sample to kind of judge. But, you know, aside from that, even within that, right, and it's not okay to – just go, you know, several games under in April. But I think when you look at the performance and when you're looking at the guys in the back end, I think we need to judge it by the players. Again, Pressly, Merriweather, Hodge, guys like that who are supposed to hold down the seventh, eighth, and ninth innings. if that remains an issue, then I think we could be in for a little bit more of a bumpy road, and that we may see over the next couple of weeks. But like I said, hey, be 500 going into May, and I think everything will be all right.
Talking with Evan Altman of Cubs Insider here on the Score Evening Show. Rami Makhlouf, your host this evening. It hasn't all been bad. They did get two wins over the weekend in Arizona, and listening to some of the comments from Jed Hoyer and talking about what it's going to take for this team to sort of reach its full potential and approach that 90 win mark that Craig Counsell sort of circled at the end of last year, was sort of doing some of the little things well, and specifically running the bases real well and playing good defense. And I thought we saw both of those things play a big factor in the two wins that they did manage to get in Arizona.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, Pete Crow Armstrong is, you know, he stands out. We saw him both sides, right? We saw him kind of beat out a force at second. We saw him nail a runner coming into third with a really strong throw. But we saw some of that from Matt Shaw as well, right?
Yep.
Not only the home run, but he looks like he can handle himself pretty well at third base. There's going to be maybe some growing pains, but he's a lot faster than I think people really wanted to give him credit for, given just obviously the bat being kind of the standout tool there. But you see a lot of really heads-up plays. I mean, the play from Dansby Swanson to end the game was just an off-the-charts baseball IQ move that,
yeah,
and him being super emotional, like that was so cool to see. So, and that's where I don't take too much away from this start, because as you said, right, when they're doing the little things right, and that's not something we saw from them early on last season, that I think is going to carry them a lot better over 162 games than the weird little implosions that are going to happen here and there.
The other thing that they're counting on, obviously, he was the big acquisition this offseason, was Kyle Tucker, who was dead silent in terms of his bat throughout spring training. And first couple of games, we didn't hear anything from him. That bat has started to wake up, including a home run and an RBI double. And I think Cubs fans who didn't get to see a lot of Kyle Tucker in Houston, myself included, I will admit, they're starting to see and really hear what it sounds like when he puts bat to ball. And it can be impressive, man. And that's that you're finding out why that dude is a difference maker in the middle of a lineup.
Yeah, and I've said this kind of from the start when and I was the same way, right? I knew of him as a member of what has been a very, very good organization for many years now. But if you just looked on how much hype these players got, how often you hear them mentioned, you'd figure he was the fifth or sixth guy on that Astros roster, right? There's just almost no hype around him. But then when you look at his career over the last five seasons, ever since he became a regular, we're talking about a top 10 hitter in all of baseball, right? Like this guy, even last year with a broken leg that kept him out for a bunch of the season, just put up some incredible numbers. You know, the kind of stuff that would get you compared to Juan Soto were it a full season. And so people got a little scared, right? Because the first look they got at him, a lot of them, was in spring training where he collected, one hit, you know, and just looked kind of lost up there. But some of these guys, you know, again, they've been around long enough. I think he's one of them. He knows when to be able to turn it on, and we're seeing that. And he's the type of guy that can carry the lineup. They haven't had anybody like that in a while who could challenge that 40 home run mark and really get after it. So I think Cubs fans are going to really, really enjoy, even if it is only for a season, you know, we'll see, knock wood. But he's a superstar player, and I think he's really going to lift this team.
Since you brought it up that it may only be for a season, Evan, my take on that is if you can't re-sign him and you don't win a World Series this year, especially with Cam Smith making the roster for the Astros at 22 years old, you kind of lost that trade. Is that do you think overstating the situation?
Not necessarily, but I look at it in the bigger picture of if you're not, you know, we've heard them talk many times about certain players they didn't pursue, you know, and it's understandable when Juan Soto is getting $760 million that, you know, I think a lot of people can justify that. But when you look at this and say, if not him, then who is a superstar that you're going to go out and find who's a better fit for your organization, across multiple different levels, when we're talking about, you know, somebody who bats from the left side for power, who's a Gold Glover in right field, and who, you know, you've had in your city, you've had on your team, and given him, you get a year to pitch yourself. If this isn't the guy you go out and spend the big money on, who's that next one going to be? Because you can effectively bid against anyone. You're not bidding against anyone, right? They can go ahead and kind of pitch him this whole time. So that concerns me more, the long-term look at how this team pursues free agents or superstar bats in general. But yeah, I mean, hey, if Cam Smith does become just an incredible stud and Isak Paredes is hitting home runs into the Crawford boxes and, you know, Kyle Tucker's gone in a year and the Cubs only won 85 games and missed out on the playoffs, I think it's definitely fair to say that that the trade didn't work out in their favor. Sure.
Evan, I got to ask you, it's the story of baseball right now is the torpedo bat. I know you have a piece up on it right now at CubsInsider.com that folks can check out. My initial reaction is that's cool, and maybe it's here to stay and it changes the game, but it's only three games, and that's a very good Yankees lineup, and that's a very beat-up Brewers bullpen. There could be a lot of factors that led into the 15 home runs over the weekend, 9-1 game on Saturday. Let's all pump the brakes a little bit on any overreaction to the torpedo bat, on everybody in baseball using it or people calling to ban it. We have a very small sample size on what this thing is, and I feel like everybody's just going a little bit crazy over it. Where are you at on the torpedo bat?
Yeah, I mean, and we're hearing more about it, right? Giancarlo Stanton was swinging one last year. Now, some people will look at that and say, well, maybe that's why his elbows are messed up. You know, Aaron Judge has said, I'm not going to change it. Look at what I've done the last 2 years. I think it's a situation just and kind of some of the things I noted in there were like the big hockey puck knob or the axe handle kind of a bat, which my son has a lot of experience swinging. Not every kind of innovation that we see in bats is going to be a fit for every player. I think these are things that work out really well for some. And I think there's some placebo to it because you look at all the home runs they hit. Well, Judge hit three home runs and then hit another one. So he's got four, I think, already on the season. Again, he's swinging the same old bat. You know, is this a big deal if everybody's hitting home runs with their same old bats? Maybe they're just using the juice balls that they used for Judge a couple years ago to get to his Yankees record. I don't know. They just put them back into circulation. But I'm interested to see the larger sample as more guys start swinging. And as they've taken mass and density away from the end of the bat to focus it not just on the barrel, these are custom made for these players to go to where they hit it most. But what I'm interested to see now is when they don't hit it there, if you are catching it off the end, is that more deleterious, if you will, to their production because now you've taken that wood away and now those miss hits are even worse because you don't have as much room for error. So time will tell. We just need a bigger sample, but I'm interested to follow it.
And I think one of the things that a lot of people are missing with this is it's not just the Yankees that are using these. A guy in their organization was the one who sort of came up with the idea and has been experimenting with it and tweaking it for a couple of years, a former MIT physicist of all people who came up with this. But guys around baseball, including a couple of Cubs, are using that torpedo bat.
Yeah, I mean, Dansby Swanson hit a big home run yesterday using one. Nico Horner swinging one. My understanding is that Michael Busch either has been or will be. So these things have been around. Like, players have had exposure to them. A lot of people were swinging. It just the thing is, nobody really pays attention to it if you're not looking for it. But then all of a sudden, when you hit three home runs on three pitches, right? Not the first time ever it's happened. I've seen the Cubs do it, just not on the first three pitches of the game. So you have kind of this historic thing against a former pitcher of theirs. It puts a lot of the hype around it. So, again, this is I don't think it's as big a deal as we're making it because of that kind of big incident there or series of incidents. But yeah, I mean, something to watch, right? You'll see it in the games. I noticed it. You could kind of see it if you're looking for it, especially with Horner. But, again, Bush is one I understand. And I think how many times are we going to see this? How many times have we heard it pass? A guy goes into a slump. He borrows somebody else's bat. Mm-hmm. That becomes a big deal, right? Just because he's swinging a different bat that wasn't his. I think we'll see a lot of that too, right? And then you'll see guys go back from it. They'll switch to a torpedo bat. They'll go into a bad slump. They'll go back to their old one. They'll hit three homers. And then all of a sudden it's the bat's fault, right? It's the warrior, not the weapon, right, at the end of the day.
You know, I was saying it's pretty brilliant in its simplicity, Evan, even though it's an MIT physicist who came up with it and it took a lot of experimenting and tweaking of this thing over a couple of years. They just took the wood and moved it to where these guys are hitting the ball. It's when you think about it in that way, it's wild to me that baseball has been being played for, I don't know, 150 plus years, and nobody ever thought of this before. It took an MIT physicist to think, hey, why don't we take the wood and put it here where they hit the ball with it? What do you guys think of that? And like I said, brilliant in its simplicity if it works.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that, again, we've seen little innovations, you know, but if you go back, like the bats were just bigger in general, you know, and then they kind of shaved them down a certain way. And then it's like maple was the craze. And then, like I said, we saw the hockey puck knobs come around. We've seen the axe handles or more, you know, kind of a pommel handle, if you will, that doesn't have the typical knob on the end at all. So it's just everybody's looking for an advantage. I think at the end of the day, where these are very interesting to me is that it's not just a single generic bat turn like you'd normally see, right? They are custom. So like, I think Anthony Volpe was one, like he hits it more off the label. So his is maybe a little farther down than someone who maybe does hit it more toward the end. And so depending on your style of swing and kind of how you make contact, where your barrel control is, I think it really will depend. And some guys are probably going to be harmed by Nico Horner. I like the idea of this because we're talking about a guy who rarely swings and misses, who has incredibly precise barrel control. And so for him, maybe it does give him a little bit more pop, you know, a couple extra miles an hour off the bat. And that yields really good results. But I think, again, for someone like Aaron Judge, who depends on just having a huge bat, being a huge individual, he wants as much potential for those miss hits to still fly out as possible. So I think he sticks with his old bat. But again, like I said, it's fascinating when the kind of spotlight comes on this, because now we all get a chance. Everybody's digging into it. So now we're going to start getting more data on it. We're going to hear more about it. And it's going to be a fun topic, at least for me, because I'm a giant nerd for this stuff.
Right.
I'm interested in following it. And I think even people who aren't nerds, it's like, oh, you know, it's a controversy. So we can kind of follow baseball. It's got to be loving this right now.
That's Evan Altman. Check out his work, including his article on the torpedo bat and the couple of Cubs that have already been using it. It's up at CubsInsider.com. Follow him on Twitter at DEvanAltman, and my guest for the last few minutes. Always appreciate the time and the insight. Evan, enjoy your night, my man.
Absolutely. You do the same. Thanks for having me.
We're back live with more Rami McLaugh on 670 The Score in Odyssey Station.
With you till about 8:30 on a busy night in Chicago sports. You might be turning on your radio and expecting to hear Chuck and Bill on the call for Bulls basketball. They're over on our sister station 780 WBBM, trailing the Oklahoma City Thunder right now 40-24, the score in that one, about 8 minutes left in the second quarter. And they're over there because the Cubs will be playing baseball right here on these airwaves, your home for Chicago Cubs baseball, taking on the A's in Sacramento. Pregame getting underway at about 8:30. I'm going to get into some Bears talk with you coming up in the 8 o'clock hour. If you want to get in on that, 312-644-6767 is how you can always get in on this here show with me. If you want to shoot me a call, give me a text, whatever it is that you got, if you want to talk some Bears with me in the 8 o'clock hour. But wanted to talk about a couple things that are going on at the NFL owners meeting, and they all kind of go hand in hand when you talk about some of the rules changes that are on the table as proposals right now at the NFL owners meetings in Palm Beach, Florida. And the one that's getting the most hype, the most buzz, is this push to ban the tush push, for lack of a better term, no pun or rhyming intended. And this was put forth by the Green Bay Packers. And Matt LaFleur, their head coach, has not commented on it. Their GM today said he doesn't know all the details of it, but he strongly supports the move to ban the tush push. And I didn't think this would get a whole lot of traction. I didn't think this would get a whole lot of support. But according to a source with direct knowledge of the competition committee and their thinking, said the proposal would be hotly contested among coaches, general managers, and it's getting some support. And the rule proposal itself specifically says it's to prohibit an offensive player from pushing a teammate who was lined up directly behind the snapper and receives the snap immediately at the snap. And what they're hiding behind is player safety and preventing injuries. And that's a bunch of BS. There's nothing about this that's really any more dangerous than any other NFL play. The league presented the injury risk of the push sneak based on data modeling, saying defensive players are at risk while launching headfirst and offensive linemen at risk because of their bent posture operating in a narrow window, which could lead to neck injuries. Said one club executive, it's not backed by data. It was all subjective. Which, of course, it's not backed by data because... Just listen to that description of what they're saying is dangerous about this play to NFL players. Defensive players are at risk while launching head first, and offensive linemen at risk because of their bent posture operating in a narrow window, which could lead to neck injuries. Yeah, it could lead to neck injuries. I'm not saying it can, but do you know what I just described?
I'm Emma Grade, and I've spent the last 20 years building, running, and investing in some incredible businesses. The more success I've had, the more people started coming to me with questions. How do you start a business? How do you raise money? How do I bounce back from failure? On my new podcast, Aspire with Emma Grade, I'll be answering these questions and more through weekly conversations with the smartest minds out there. Listen to and follow Aspire with Emma Grade, an Odyssey podcast, available now, wherever you get your podcasts.
When I say launching headfirst or bent posture operating in a narrow window, I just described playing football. I just described what defensive linemen and offensive linemen really kind of do on every play. This isn't even a new thing in the NFL. The fact that it's done right at the snap is a new thing, but we've all seen plays where a receiver or a runner are close to the goal line or a first down, and some big offensive lineman or somebody, a tight end or something, will come running in from the back of the play and try and shove that guy and shove that pile past the line. The only thing about this that is new is that it's happening at the snap and at the line of scrimmage. It's no more dangerous there than it is anywhere else on the field or anything else that they're doing on the field. And to hide behind players' safety is just, I'll borrow Clay Harbor's words when I talked with him about this earlier on the show. It's cowardly. It's cowardly. This comes down to one thing and one thing only. You can't do it, and you can't stop it. That's what it comes down to. Two teams run this effectively. It's Philadelphia and Buffalo. And the fact is, it does in the big picture, it doesn't even get run that often. Those two teams ran the push sneak more than those were the only two teams that ran the push sneak more than five times last season. Of the 35,415 total plays last season, the push sneak accounted for only 101 of those plays. That is, I'm sure you did the math yourself in your car, 0.28%. 0.28% of all the plays that were run in the NFL last year were a tush push. And this is a major player safety issue? Come on, man. You just can't run it and you can't stop it. And so you want it out of the league. And that's weak, man. That's weak. This kind of goes back to the torpedo back conversation that we were just having. Anybody who feels like the Yankees are getting an advantage with the torpedo bat, feel free to get your own MIT physicist and bring him in and figure out how to tweak your players' bats, and teams already have been doing that. But you can do it too. And that's what I would say to teams that can't run the tush push or can't stop the tush push. You could do it too, but you can't, and so now you want it banned. And I don't understand that thinking or why the NFL would entertain that thinking. There's nothing to it about player safety. There's nothing about it that ruins the experience of watching a football game. It's just that some teams can do it. Actually, two teams can do it, and the rest of the league can't. And they're soft, and instead of trying to stop it or trying to do it themselves, they'd rather just make it illegal and not let teams do it. And meanwhile, while we're talking about player safety, I sure hope that the Packers and anybody else who's pushing banning the tush push for player safety, y'all better just sit out the conversation about extending the season to 18 games. Because if you're worried about a play that is run 0.28% of the time, and what that could mean for player safety, I would imagine, unless you're, I don't know, disingenuous, hypocritical, I would imagine you want nothing to do with the whole 18th week and the 100 or so plays that your players would have to play in that. That's way too dangerous, right? I would love to see the chart cross-referencing who's voting to ban the tush push and who's voting for an 18th game. And if you're voting for both of those things, where exactly do you stand on player safety? By the way, that 18th game, it's coming. It's just a matter of when, according to many, many outlets. And there's not really anything the players can do to stop it. So we'll see where all this goes. If and when there's an 18th game, if and when they will ban the tush push, a lot of things changing in the NFL. I want to talk. I'm short on time. We're packing a 3-hour show into a 2.5-hour bag. There was a couple other things NFL related I want to get into. We might have time before we get out of here around 8:30. I want to zoom in though on our football team, our NFL team, the Chicago Bears, and one study and some very, very rough math says they got worse this offseason. I know. I don't understand it either. I'll explain and try to get to the bottom of it right after this. It's Rami Makhlouf with you on the Score Evening Show on Chicago Sports Radio 670 Score.